Om Jnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha.
Now in this verse, the Supreme Personality of Godhead clearly explains that anyone who knows Lord Krishna to be the Supreme Person is actually the knower of everything. The imperfect knower goes on simply speculating about the Absolute Truth. But the perfect knower, without wasting his valuable time, engages directly in Krishna consciousness, the devotional service of the Supreme Lord. Throughout the whole of Bhagavad Gita, this fact is being stressed at every step. And still there are so many stubborn commentators on Bhagavad Gita who consider the Supreme Absolute Truth and the living entities to be one and the same. Vedic knowledge is called Shruti, learned by oral reception. One should actually receive the Vedic message from authorities like Krishna and his representatives. Here, Krishna distinguishes everything very nicely, and one should hear from this source. Simply to hear like the hogs is not sufficient. One must be able to understand from the authorities. It is not that one should simply speculate academically. One should submissively hear from Bhagavad Gita that these living entities are always subordinate to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Anyone who is able to understand this according to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, knows the purpose of the Vedas. No one else knows the purpose of the Vedas. The word bhajati is very significant. In many places, the word bhajati is expressed in relationship with the service of the Supreme Lord. If a person is engaged in full Krishna consciousness in the devotional service of the Lord, it is to be understood that he has understood all the Vedic knowledge. In the Vaishnava Parampara, it is said that if one is engaged in the devotional service of Krishna, then there is no need for any other spiritual process for understanding the Supreme Absolute Truth. He has already come to the point because he is engaged in the devotional service of the Lord. He has ended all preliminary processes of understanding. But if anyone, after speculating for hundreds of thousands of lives, does not come to the point that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and that one has to surrender there, all his speculation for so many years and lives is a useless waste of time. Yomam eva masamudho janati purushottamam sasarvavid bhajati mam sarva bhavena bharata. Whoever knows me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, without doubting, is the knower of everything. He therefore engages himself in full devotional service to me, O son of Bharat. Tomorrow, as you all know, we shall be celebrating the day on which Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, appeared in this world, known as Janmashtami. Traditionally, in Vaishnava culture, the night or the evening and the night before a major festival, there is the Adhivasa, one celebration, not a celebration, but a ceremony to begin the celebration. The celebration begins the next day, and to get us to purify everything and to prepare our consciousness for that, the Adhivasa ceremony is held. Some special puja is done. In Bengal, the Adivas is done with kirtan. Everything should be done by kirtan. So this evening, we can, without performing all the specific rituals, we can prepare for the appearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Prepared to celebrate that. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, the original form of the Personality of Godhead, Purna Purushottam, he appeared in the womb of Devaki because she and Vasudev had prepared themselves for this day. So we're preparing the night before, but they prepared from two lifetimes before. When Sutapa and Prishni, the Prajapatis, Sutapa was the son of Lord Brahma, he was ordered by Lord Brahma to beget progeny. That's what Prajapatis do. Nowadays they want to limit the population by contraceptive methods. But when the universe was empty, there were hardly any human beings, Lord Brahma, the creator of the universe, brought forth the Prajapatis who were imbued with the potency to produce many children. Among them, Daksha Prajapati is very famous because he produced so many children in different species of life. However, Sutapa and Prishni, they weren't so much interested in having many children. They wanted to have the Supreme Lord as their child, or one as good as him. So they engaged in austerities for 1,000 celestial years. We have some austerity tomorrow, fasting. So we find that very difficult. We might find it very difficult. Actually, the secret to not finding it difficult is to be fully engaged. Otherwise, if we're not, then we're in empty stomach consciousness instead of full Krishna consciousness. So the Prajapatis, Sutapa and Prishni, they underwent austerities, after which the Supreme Lord appeared to them, said, "You want a son like me? Well, there's no one like me. I'll come and be your son." So he came as Prishni Garbha. And then again, the Kashyap and Sutapa and Prishni in their next life were Kashyap and Aditi, and they gave birth to Upendra, the little Indra, or the son or the younger brother of Indra, Vamana Deva. Then, in their next birth, again they gave birth to the Supreme Lord as Vasudeva and Devaki. So they prepared for a long time. Vasudeva means the son of Vasudeva. That is the name of Krishna. It also means one whose vas, whose residence is everywhere. Vasudeva also indicates the state of pure consciousness. Satvam Vishuddham Vasudeva Shaktitam. So because Vasudeva and Devaki were in pure consciousness, therefore the Supreme Lord appeared as their son. Krishna's birth is not an affair of the mixing of excretions of the human body. Krishna's appearance is discussed here in Bhagavad Gita. Ajopi sannavyayatma. Tomorrow I plan on discussing this more. What is the meaning of Aja? Unborn. The birth of the unborn. Krishna appears in this world. But he appears within the heart or the purified consciousness of his devotees. So Vasudeva and Devaki, they prepared themselves for a very long time, desiring only to have the Supreme Lord as their son. So our practice of Krishna consciousness is to prepare to receive the Supreme Lord within our hearts. He's there, but we don't see him. He's there in everyone's heart. Ishvara sarva-bhutanam hriddeshe-ajunatishtati. The Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart. But we don't see him because we have other interests. So Krishna comes to this world. He's already here. The world is already within him. The world is produced from him. And he's already within the world, within every atom. The whole universe is in him, and he is within every atom of the universe. So he is inside and outside of everything. Namasye purusham tvadyam ishvaram prakrite param nalaksham sarva bhutanam antarbahiravastitam. Queen Kunti Devi, praise to Krishna that you are, I offer my obeisances to you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You are the Supreme Controller beyond material nature. Although you appear to appear within material nature, you are not part of material nature. Ishvara Prakriti Param. You are not observed by most people. Although you are outside and inside of everything. So Krishna is everywhere. But most people don't see him. So Krishna's coming to this world gives the opportunity for everyone to see him. And you may say, well, that was a long time ago he came. But we can continue to hear about him, about his appearance in this world. And in this way, hearing about Krishna is as good as seeing him. So Krishna's appearance in this world gives it meaning. Otherwise, there's no meaning to this world. As many philosophers have concluded, that this world is meaningless. It seems to be bizarre that there's so much order within the universe, but for all the order and for all the struggle and endeavor of all living beings, we simply die. So life, see, everything seems to be absurd. It seems to be like some Kafka novel in which you don't know what's going on or why, but whatever it is, it doesn't seem very good. The conclusion is, you don't know, but it's miserable. So, Krishna comes to show there is a reason for everything, and I am behind everything, sarva karana karana, and there is hope, great hope. Sometimes people accuse that what they suppose to be Hinduism or Buddhism is pessimistic because they say that, well, miserable. This world is miserable and we should get released from it. So this is not actually pessimistic. It is simply realistic because this world is miserable. If we examine neutrally, impartially, and we have to conclude that this world is miserable. Janma mrityu jara vyadhi dukkha dosha nudarshana. You may say, well, that's not impartial, you're quoting Bhagavad Gita. But Krishna in Bhagavad Gita is not stating any sectarian dogma, he's just speaking a fact that this world is miserable because there is birth, death, old age, and disease. We see so many books on health and so many different kinds of treatments. People talk about health. Well, this just suggests that everyone's unhealthy. Otherwise, why so much? They have magazines and whole stores and huge hospitals and vitamin E tablets and all kinds of things. Just suggesting that people want to be healthy, but they're not. Well, that's just an example. People are pursuing the pot at the end of the rainbow. You know that? They have pots at the end of rainbows in Finland also. The pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. It's, you're hoping if you can find it, then you'll be rich. But you never find it. It's not findable. Happiness in this material world, it's not findable. Or even if one thinks he's happy, then it's the slight happiness, the water in a drop of desert happiness. If you're in a desert, you don't have any experience here. But in the hot summer, in the Sahara, or any desert, Rajasthan or whatever, you may be dying for water. One water is so hot, and someone comes out of nowhere and says, "I have water for you. Be of good cheer. There is water." Say, "Really? Okay." So, open your mouth, put out your tongue. You're eagerly waiting for water, and they bring a syringe and put one drop, and they tell you, "By the way, in that drop of water, there's cyanide also. Bye bye." So, a drop of water cannot give satisfaction. It's water, but it cannot give satisfaction. And it's also mixed with poison. So, the so-called happiness of this material world, it's happiness, but it cannot satisfy us. And it's also poison, because the pursuit of happiness in this material world poisons our real life's mission of finding real happiness, which is in service to Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Krishna comes to this world to show that there is meaning. What is the meaning of life? The meaning of life is dancing. That is the purpose of... What is the purpose of life? Dancing with Krishna. Not any dancing. This Nietzsche, the famous skeptical madman come philosopher, said that I might believe in a God if he danced. Well, he didn't know. He only knew about God who sits on a cloud and curses people and burns them in hell forever. He didn't know about God who dances. He dances and dances, and then he comes as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and brings us all to dance with him. So Krishna comes to this world to show what is the meaning. It's not meaningless. There is meaning. It's not just some kind of big cosmic accident. We see the whole universe is running on with order. If there was no order, then there would be no science. Science means to study the order in the universe and to attempt to manipulate it for the supposed good of the human race. So there's order, so if there's order, there should be some meaning, unless there's some madman or mad being who set it all up just to torture us. If there's order, someone must have put it together. You don't find it. All these buildings here, they didn't come into being by chance. That one day there was a big storm, and then this building came up. So you might say, well, why not? If there were enough storms, then maybe one time all the woodwork and the glass and the bricks and the cement and the plaster and the electric lines and the telephone lines and the internet lines and the paint and the refrigerators and the beds and all the rest of the furniture, it would all come into place perfectly. Right? If there were enough storms, surely it would happen by chance, one time. What do you think? Anyone like to support the building in Helsinki come into being by chance during a rainstorm theory? Any supporters? You don't have any scientists here? Scientists who support that the whole universe came into being by chance. All the order, all the setup of the universe, which is infinitely more complex than this building complex in Helsinki, has come into being by chance. And very scientifically, they say that, well, if there were enough chances, it must have come. If there were enough explosions here and there, then a building would come into being. If you like, you can make scientific inquiry and produce a new method of a new cheap method of producing buildings. If by chance explosions make order, then you should be able to, by explosions, make buildings. You just have to learn how to control it in the right way. So you can have the explosion construction company. But generally we see that explosions destroy buildings. Not generally, but in every case. The terrorists are caught plotting to blow up a building. Well, we just wanted to improve it, you know. And it needed some renovation, so we decided to bomb it. It's all scientific. It's what we learned in school. If there's enough explosions, then everything comes into being by chance. Of course, this is foolishness, but it's quite amazing the extent to which supposedly intelligent people will go to deny that there must be a supreme controller who has put everything into order. So if we don't recognize that there is a supreme controller, then we either come up with poppycock ideas such as everything has come into being by chance, which is taught as science and taken very seriously by people who are very serious about their foolishness. They have debate, they have scientific discussions, and they award each other university degrees and Nobel Prizes, and they write books, and in this way they're very committed to being the greatest fools in history. So one can either, if one doesn't accept there's a supreme controller, he can say everything is coming to being by chance, and then say, well, there's no meaning whatsoever to life. But even to say that there is no meaning to life, even if we say that, by saying that, we're making a philosophical statement. Where that means we've considered that what is the meaning and come to the conclusion there is no meaning. But even to say there is no meaning, that in one way is giving meaning, because it negates all other possible theories of the purpose of the universe. So that is also a philosophical statement. So through all this din of various speculative theories about the meaning or non-meaning of the universe, the purpose or non-purpose of life, Krishna appears in the prison house of Kamsa. He appears in the prison house of Kamsa. Kamsa thinks, I have imprisoned Vasudeva and Devaki, but he is imprisoned by Krishna. Like every other living being in this material world, he is in the prison of the material world, and Krishna appears in Kamsa's prison house and immediately leaves it. He demonstrates. He's not imprisoned by anyone. He cannot be imprisoned by Kamsa and all his lackeys put together. Krishna is independent. But when he goes to Vrindavan, the young baby Krishna dances with the gopis, clapping their hands. And he's tied up by Mother Yashoda. Kamsa cannot hold him in his prison. But Krishna is tied up by the ropes of love of his mother, apparent mother, because Krishna himself is the father and mother of everyone. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna states that Pitaham asya jagata, mata dhata pitamaha. Krishna says, I'm the father of the whole universe, and the mother, and the grandfather, and the support of everything. So Krishna, out of love for his devotees, appears within this material world, and to the philosophers, for the faithful philosophers, they can understand, he is the Supreme Lord. But Krishna cannot, even he appears in this world and shows, yes, I am God. He shows his universal form, Vishwarupa. Yes, I am God. No, all the demons cannot subdue him. So all the demigods come to pray to him. Young Brahma, Varanendra, Rudra, Maruta, Stunvanti, Divyai, Stavai. All the demigods offer him prayers. But he shows that even a higher principle than being the orderer, the controller, which we presume to be the function of God, the benevolent, who is God? He's the, if we want to define God, we'll say the supreme benevolent being. Or if we think that Satan is supreme, then we'll say the supreme malevolent being. But actually there is no Satan. There's no competitor. It's not that there are independent forces of good and evil and God is battling with the forces of evil. It's not like that. That's another phase of misunderstanding, bordering on atheism, that God has got a competitor, Satan. No, Krishna is fully in control of everything. But even so, there is another principle, even more than his godness. His being God means he is the supreme controller. Etad ishanam isyasya prakriti stho pitat gunai na yujyate sadatmasthai yatha buddhistadashaya. The godness of God, or the ishanam, the quality of being the controller of Isha, the controller, is manifest in that even though he appears within this material world, but he is Ishwaram Prakriti Param. He always remains above this material world. He's not affected by this material world. He's never part of it. And even his devotees, his pure devotees, they appear in this world, they're of the same quality. When Krishna comes, he comes with his devotees. And they're also like him, not part of this world. So that is the godness of God. He is the supreme controller. Even though he appears within this material world, he is not affected by it. He is always in control of it. It's just like if the king may decide to visit the prison house. So he's also within the prison house, but he's not. The prisoners would make a great blunder to consider that the king is also a prisoner. Now he's also in the prison. But it doesn't mean that he's a prisoner. Rather, if he desires, he can release the prisoners. Just by his desire. Oh, okay, release him. And if he wants, chop off his head. That is God. He can. Oh, that is a king in the old despotic system. The king had such power. He can kill someone. He can make a beggar into a lord. He has that power. So God, he is not under the control of the material laws. This is his godness. Nevertheless, Krishna's appearance in this world comes to demonstrate even a higher principle. Philosophically, we can surmise, if one is somewhat philosophical and pious, one can surmise that there should be a controller. It's not needed for Krishna to appear in this world to show that there's a controller. But he comes particularly to demonstrate that he is not simply a force or a concept, but he is Purushottama. In this verse that we're reading today from Bhagavad Gita, the word Purushottama is used. He is a person, but he is Uttama. He is above the darkness of this material world. This can also be understood, Purusha Uttama. He is above all other persons. He's a person. Or he's above all persons. That doesn't mean he's a non-person, but he is a person not like the other person. He's a supreme person, very simply to state. He is the supreme person. But a person means personality. And a person means he's related with other persons. So Krishna comes to show that yes, there is the supreme controller, that's me. But higher than simply being, a higher understanding than simply understanding the supreme controller is to understand him as the supreme person. What are his personal interactions? How he loves his devotees? What is his affection for his devotees? Now, many people, Vaishnavas, in the Vaishnava society, it is generally supposed that the four-handed form of the Lord, Chaturbhuj, Narayan Murti, this is the supreme form of the Lord, because that's more majestic than Krishna. You don't find Narayan being dragged in the mud holding onto the tails of cows. Or you don't find Narayan being tied up with ropes. You don't find Narayana dancing with gopis. He has four hands. He's majestic. So it would seem that he is supreme. And when Krishna first appeared, he showed a four-handed form, Vishnu form. So many presume that Narayan is supreme. But then, immediately after showing that Narayan form, he took the form of baby Krishna. He didn't stay with Vasudeva and Devaki, who worshipped him in love but with knowledge of his opulence. They offered prayers to him. Can you imagine that when a child is born, the parents offer prayers to him? Rather, of course, a newborn child is not conscious of much of what's going on. But the child offers respects to the parents. That's the norm. But here we find that Vasudeva and Devaki offered prayers to Krishna. They knew that he was their son, but they knew also that he was the Supreme Lord, and they treated him thus. So Krishna actually immediately left them on Devaki's request. Don't stay here, otherwise Kamsa will want to attack you. Now this is very interesting, because she understood he's the Supreme Lord, but at the same time she was afraid for him. Although if he's the Supreme Lord, then millions of Kamsas cannot do anything to him. So her knowledge of his supremacy was mixed with pure love. But still, pure love by which she thought of him as her child, and she feared for his safety, although he can never be in any unsafe condition. So Krishna left immediately Vasudeva and Devaki. The prison to Krishna was no prison. Just by his desire, the doors opened and the guards fell into deep sleep. And Krishna, in the baby form, went to Vrindavan. So he appeared as four-handed Vishnu, Narayana. But then immediately, he went to live with his other apparent parents, Nanda and Yashoda, who never thought of him as the Supreme Lord. They didn't treat him like that. They only knew him as their son. So Krishna, he appeared as Narayan, but he himself was more interested in exchanging love with his devotees, pure love with the devotees of Vrindavan, rather than exhibiting his opulence as Narayana. So if we say that Narayana is supreme, that's true. If we say that Narayana is supreme, even above Krishna, well, that's also true from one perspective. From the perspective of majesty and glory, Narayana shows that more. But from the perspective that Krishna himself relishes, or the perspective that he himself takes, more important than tattva-vichar, or philosophical understanding, is rasa-vichar, or understanding based on the loving relationships between himself and his devotees. So Krishna appears in this world to show there is meaning. What is that meaning? I am the meaning. I give meaning. There's no meaning without me, Krishna shows. And what is that? Is it simply to say, yes, we accept Krishna? But what does it mean? To accept Krishna is not simply some slogan, just like some people say, you just have to believe in Jesus. Although they never make any effort to theologically define what it means to believe in Jesus. They just say, it's like a slogan, you believe in Jesus. And that's the beginning and the end of their theology. So, but believe in Krishna, yes, but what does that mean? That means commitment. It's not just a matter of saying hallelujah and that's everything finished. But one has to commit to Krishna. Krishna, he comes to this world to call us to join him in his pleasure pastimes. But to do so, some qualification is required. That qualification, the preliminary qualification for entering into the pastimes of Krishna, is Sharanagati, surrender to Krishna, Sarvadhaman Parityajya, Mamekam Sharanam Vraja, Aham Tvam Sarva Papebhyo Moksha Yishyami Vasuja. Krishna says, surrender to me only, giving up all other. supposed dharmas, take full shelter in them. So that, what is that? What is the meaning of that? That is anukulyasya sankalpa. To take the vow to act, speak and think only in a way that is favorable for increasing our devotion to Krishna. Krishnarthe akhila cheshta, all endeavors simply for the sake of Krishna. Then pratikulyasya varajanam, and to assiduously give up any thought, word or deed that impedes our progress in devotional service. Pratikulya rakshishyatiti vishvaso, to have firm faith that Krishna will protect me, and goptritvaivaranam tata, and to, that Krishna will maintain me. So a devotee, he doesn't, the devotee of Krishna doesn't run here and there to various demigods, simply take shelter of Krishna. You know, it's Krishna, faith that Krishna will protect me. Atmanikshepa, it means full surrender, throwing ourselves on Krishna. Krishna, I am yours. Just like we throw ourselves with full faith that Krishna, He will protect us. Running towards Krishna. And karpanye, dainya, humility. To think I am very fallen, but Krishna, nevertheless, Krishna is so kind, He will accept me. So these are the six principles of surrender to Krishna. You may think, well, that sounds very severe, that we have to surrender to Krishna. But again, bhakti, as discussed in Bhagavad Gita, elaborated on in Srimad Bhagavatam and given full exposition in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. Bhakti is the religion of love. It is not simply a set of formulas, but it is the reciprocation of Krishna, who is with the jiva, with full interest, full desire that let this person come to me. Krishna is anxious that everyone comes to him. This word love, of course, it's a very much misused word. We can understand what is love by studying or hearing the narrations of Krishna's interactions with his devotees. We may be surprised that Krishna's devotees apparently have to suffer so much in this world. Generally we think if God loves us, then he will give us all facilities for enjoying this world. But rather, he shows his love to us by removing all facilities by which we might attempt to enjoy this world. That is his love. Because the attempt to enjoy this world is the obstacle in our throwing ourselves to Krishna, surrendering to Krishna. There can be no actual benefit for us as long as we're trying to enjoy this world. So Krishna very kindly takes away the illusion by which those who are attempting to come towards him, they remain shackled in this material world. So Krishna comes to show to the philosophers that he is the Supreme Lord. Those the faithful, those who are pious philosophers, they can accept, yes, here he is. This is the meaning of life. And for those who are even more advanced, Krishna comes specifically for them to give sakha to his devotees, that those who are living in this world and just desiring Krishna, Krishna comes to fulfill the desires of his devotees and to perform wonderful pastimes by which devotees, even in future generations, by hearing of them, they will become attracted and want to take part in that. We have the pastimes of Krishna recorded in the scripture, particularly in the Srimad Bhagavatam. There are many biographies. There's one website with 20,000 mini biographies. But hearing about Krishna's activities is not like hearing about Napoleon or Hitler or Madame Tussaud or David Beckham, the footballer. It's not like hearing about these persons, because by hearing about Krishna, Srinu Sukhadam Shubhadam Bhavasana, in this world of birth and death, by hearing about Krishna, we actually become happy and we become purified and we become attracted to join Krishna. Hearing about Krishna is not like hearing about some historical personality, because Krishna is not a historical personality. You may say, well, he appeared 5,000 years ago or whatever. But Krishna is beyond time. We say that he appeared on this day, but actually Krishna is beyond time. Krishna's pastimes are eternal. They're going on always, either in this universe or another universe. So Krishna is, by appearing in this world, he's attracting, he's giving us the opportunity to join his pastimes. His pastimes, his appearance, it's not some static or some event which took place and now it's finished and it's over. But rather, it's going on eternally. And by showing how wonderful are his pastimes, how much better it is to be serving Krishna in his wonderful pastimes than doing anything else that the material world has to offer. Far better than being a David Beckham or a Napoleon or a Stalin or a Cleopatra. Far, far, far better is to be a blade of grass in Vrindavan that the gopis may sometimes step on. That Uddhava wanted that benediction. Lord Brahma wanted that benediction. Lord Brahma is already in a position far greater than anyone in those 20,000 biographies. But he is desiring, may I become a blade of grass in Vrindavan, so that the devotees of Krishna may sometimes place their feet upon me and I become purified. So the desire to become great in this material world is just another way of demonstrating one's foolishness. But Krishna, who is actually great in all respects, appears in this world to give us the opportunity to serve him. And serving him is far greater than any position of this material world. The king today is the cat or dog tomorrow. The famous football star today is the forgotten football star tomorrow. And again, cat or dog in the next life. But the servant of Krishna is always glorious because Krishna is glorious. And the glory is the full surrender to Krishna with loving reciprocation. So this is our adhivas, that we can, how we shall know Krishna. Krishna is appearing in this world. We should know who he is. He's not just any other person. The birthday of Gandhi or Napoleon or David Beckham or whoever we may think is great, That will not be celebrated in 5,000 years' time. But Krishna, his birth, will be celebrated eternally, because Krishna is eternally glorious and his pastimes are eternal. And he comes to this world to beckon us towards him. We should know him as he presents himself in Bhagavad Gita. Janma karma cha me divyam evam yo veti tatvataha tyagva deham punar janma naiti mameti sojana. Simply by accepting that everything Krishna does is not of this material world. He is beyond the modes of material nature. He is the controller of the modes of nature. Everything he does is divya, transcendental, wonderful. Everything that's enacted within the three modes of material nature are simply causes of bondage. But Krishna, he appears within the material nature, and to persons who do not understand him, he appears to be a product of this material nature, but he's always independent of material nature. And simply by accepting this and hearing about Krishna, we also become free from the influence of material nature and gain the opportunity to enter into the real meaning of life, which is to dance eternally with Krishna, which is why he comes to this world. So poor Nitze, he was a skeptic, and he's somewhere in someone's stool, crawling around as a worm, probably. Skepticism doesn't help. Yes, the Supreme Lord is dancing. He's the greatest dancer. In this material world, we're dancing dogs in the hands of the opposite sex. But rather we should dance to Krishna's tune. That will satisfy Krishna. And we also shall be fully satisfied. Krishna comes to call us to his pleasure dance, transcendental pleasure dance. Any question about this? Yeah, please. So.
Tomorrow is Janmashtami. Can you explain where this word
Janmashtami
comes from?
Janmashtami, where the word comes from. I'll tell tomorrow. Next installment. There's much more to be said. I'll probably overlap some of the things I said today.
Maharaj, you said that the name of life and the theme of this world is dance with Krishna.
Yeah, that's one way of defining it. There are various ways of defining the meaning of life. You'll find in the Science of Self-Realization, there's one London Broadcasting Corporation, some short-lived radio company. Mike Robinson was interviewing Prabhupada. I happened to be there at that time. It was an open darshan while he was asking. He was interviewing Prabhupada. He was very respectful. So he asked this Mike Robinson. Actually, Prabhupada said that as soon as that interview finished, Prabhupada said, this should be transcribed and printed. Prabhupada said, this is 90% of the basic philosophy of people need to know about Krishna consciousness is in there. So anyway, quite early in the interview, he asked Prabhupada, what is the aim of life? And I was expecting Prabhupada to say that we should perform austerities. Tapo devyam putraka yena sattvam shudhyat yasmad brahma sokyam tamantam. Or like this, or the purpose of life is to understand God, or the purpose of life is to inquire into the absolute truth. But Prabhupada looked at him and said, the purpose of life is to enjoy. I was surprised. Then Prabhupada explained that because by nature, it is our nature to enjoy, the jiva being part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, who is Satchidanandamaya, eternal, full of knowledge and bliss, he also has the tendency, it's the intrinsic tendency to desire to be happy. So the purpose of life is to enjoy, Prabhupada explained. But Prabhupada explained, we cannot be happy in this material condition. So we have to find that happiness which is Brahma Sokyam Tvananta, transcendental happiness, which is unlimited and eternal. Of course, he didn't exactly say it in those words, but I'm paraphrasing. What was your question?
So is there a difference between chanting with Krishna and dancing with Krishna and dancing with kirtan?
Is there a difference between dancing in kirtan and dancing with Krishna? Not your kirtan, where you are dancing now. That's dancing with Krishna. If we're actually absorbed in the bliss of Krishna Kirtan, then Krishna, certainly. Is there, Nahang tishthami vaikunte yoginam hridyeshu va tatra tishthami narada yatra gayanti madbhakta. Krishna says, I'm not in the hearts of the yogis. I'm not in Vaikuntha. You go to Vaikuntha and say, I came here to see Lord Narayan. Sorry, he's out. Where is he? There's a big kirtan going on in Helsinki. He went to join. So wherever my devotees are chanting my holy names, I am there, Krishna says. So certainly, those who are chanting with love, then the name of Krishna is non-different from Krishna. And Krishna is personally attracted to that. Because Krishna is attracted by love. So those who are chanting, Gayanti Bhakti Bhavena Haran Nama Eva Kevalam, those who are chanting with feeling for Krishna, certainly Krishna is attracted. Krishna is everywhere. But we find him, or he reveals himself to us through our service. What's that verse? Krishna reveals himself through service, beginning with chanting the holy names. So that's the answer to your question. What's the meaning of the verse? Who can say? Just in case everyone doesn't know it. Anyone else can say, Atashri Krishna Namadi Nabhaved Grahya Vindriyai Sivon Muke Hi Jivado Swayameva Spurati Adaha. Who can say the meaning? The name, form, qualities, pastimes, etc. of Krishna cannot be perceived by the materially contaminated senses. But when one becomes inclined to serve Krishna through the senses, beginning with the tongue, then Krishna personally reveals himself to such a devotee. So, any other question? That's recording? What is it, a tape recorder? Okay. There are so many devices. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna,
Hare Hare.
Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Shri Krishna Janmashtami Ki
Jai.
Followed by Srila Prabhupada's Vyasa Puja. What's that?